You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me as always for our Thursday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Glad to have you tuning in, whether this is your first time checking out Locked On Seahawks or you are a regular listener. Lots on tap on today's show. There's a KJ Wright-sized hole at Sam linebacker. Who's going to fill the void? We'll be breaking down that position competition, and we'll be checking out the defensive end group as we continue our training camp preview. Winning your league starts with the right data. Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News provides you the edge you need in your fantasy football leagues. Locked On Fantasy Football is a daily podcast all year round, so your fantasy team never fails. Subscribe to the Locked On Fantasy Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. There's a new highest paid linebacker in the NFC West. Bobby Wagner has long held that title, but that is no longer the case with Fred Warner cashing in down in the Bay Area, a five-year contract worth almost $95 million, more than $19 million per year, breaking the bank. I've seen plenty of debates out there about the value of off-ball linebackers, but I would think Seahawks fans understand just how dominant of a player Fred Warner has been in his three seasons in San Francisco. And quite frankly, in my opinion, this was the only move the 49ers could make. They had to lock this kid up long term.
Yeah, Fred Warner is an absolute superstar, just like Bobby Wagner has been over the past decade or so in Seattle. So I think that's entirely appropriate, Corbin, that the NFC West has two of the best and two of the best paid inside linebackers in the entire NFL. And as you mentioned, Fred Warner, the much younger player than Bobby Wagner, getting that new deal, averaging roughly $19 million per year. Let's not shed too many tears for Bobby Wagner. His deal is averaging roughly $18 million a year. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what Seattle chooses to do with Wagner, you know, entering his own contract date. He only has another year and a half or so on his deal. He'll be 32 years old when his contract comes up. And so it's going to be fascinating to see if Seattle is going to try to extend the future Hall of Famer, or if they're going to take the tact that some NFL teams have done and just recognizing the physicality of the linebacker position. You mentioned KJ Wright and how Seattle has a hole at that strong side linebacker position. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how Seattle deals with the inside linebacker spot. You know they have an ascending young talent in the former first round pick, Jordan Brooks. He looks poised to be able to take the mantle as Seattle's top inside linebacker. But I don't know that Wagner is willing to give that up just yet, but I do think that this is a critical season for him. As we just talked about, his contract is coming up as well. If he wants to remain in that upper echelon of those getting paid at the inside linebacker position in Seattle, I think that he has to have a better year in 2021 than he had last year.
I would agree on that front. I think when you're looking at the entire picture, I mean, if he gets 130 plus tackles again, then that's great. That's been what he has done year in, year out. I thought he was better in coverage last year. That's really, I'm just going to kind of take a little bit of a diversion here before I talk Wagner and his contract here. It drives me bonkers. Some of these football analysts that they just kind of put every player at a position group into just one pie, and they're saying, well, inside linebackers in today's NFL don't matter. Well, in some schemes, they might not be as valuable. They might be more replaceable. In other schemes like Seattle's, you need to have a player like Bobby Wagner in the middle or Jordan Brooks, who they drafted in the first round a couple years ago. I just think different schemes have different values for different positions. And we've talked about this with safeties too. There are other teams in the league that run different schemes than what Seattle does, where maybe the safety position is more replaceable and they're not going to spend big bucks on those players. But we've seen what the Seahawks defense looks like when they don't have elite talent at those safety spots. It's critical. I think you would see the same thing if Bobby Wagner was not manning the middle of their defense. It's another position that is pivotal in their defense. Having that athletic linebacker that can pursue sideline to sideline, can play coverage, That's what Fred Warner does so well in San Francisco. He's outstanding in every facet of the game. And can you imagine what that defense would have looked like? I mean, they still were a top 10 defense with all the injuries they had last year. But can you imagine what that defense would have looked like without Fred Warner in the middle? I'm mystified by how many football analysts that claim they understand the game are so down on the positional value of off-ball linebackers that are still so important in today's game, especially those guys that can cover like Wagner and Warner can.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point that you made about the coverage ability. I think that no question the game has changed, but I personally still believe that linebacker is still the iconic position in football, even more so than quarterback. I certainly recognize that, you know, again, as the game has changed and it's now so much more of a passing type of a game, then sure, those traditional glass-eating, run-stuffing, big physical linebackers, They're not quite as critical in today's era. I understand that, but it's still the game of football, and linebackers still every single year lead the NFL in tackles, and obviously defense is part of the game as well. So yeah, if you've got a versatile linebacker who can play truly all three downs the way that Wagner and that Fred Warner and the two back-to-back first-round picks the Arizona Cardinals invested in Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins, and you just think of all the other very good defenses all throughout the NFL, including the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their stellar linebacking core. And I think it's really easy to see that linebackers are very important in today's NFL. And those who can cover, to go back to your point, Corbin, I think that they are as critical as ever. I think that Fred Warner and Bobby Wagner, if they continue to play at the level that they play, the durability, the production, just the game-breaking ability that they have shown, again, not only just in against the run, but also as a blitzer, also in coverage, then I think that they are, you know, frankly, bargains for the type of impact plays that they make. And in the case of, again, Wagner and Warner specifically, both of these are high quality people off the field as well. They are big time as far as being on the cover of the team websites, the magazines and things like that, that get people excited. Traditionally, linebacker jerseys are some of the most sold jerseys in all of the sport. Again, I just think that linebacker is about as important to the game as it's ever been.
Yeah, I just find it hard to believe that some of these, and again, I'm not bashing analytics, and you and I talked plenty of analytics on this show. There's value there. I just think that linebacker is one of those positions where some of the data that we see just overlooks how valuable these players are, particularly when you have guys like Warner and Wagner that are multifaceted players that can do it all. Maybe Wagner isn't the athlete that he was 2-3 years ago, now that he's in his 30s, but he's still a pretty athletic linebacker, and he compensates for some of those losses with his instincts, his football IQ. Warner, being in the prime of his career, is extremely athletic, and the 49ers have put him on the number 3 receiver in the slot regularly, and he's shown he can do it. That is an invaluable asset for your defense. Now, real quick, going back to Wagner, as you mentioned, this is, to me, a pretty critical season for him because his cap hit next year is going to be above $20 million. It's going to be around 9.8% of Seattle's salary cap. That's a big chunk, especially with Jamal Adams set to get his extension soon. We don't know how much that's going to end up being, but it's going to be a record-breaking contract when Seattle gets him locked up. And so, with Wagner turning 32 next year, if he shows signs of regression this season, maybe isn't as good as he was in 2020, the Seahawks are going to have potentially a very difficult decision that they have to make there. If he goes out and has another all-pro caliber season, the Seahawks may very well look at his contract and say, you know what, we're going to negotiate a year or two added on to this deal with big money because we think Bobby Wagner's earned that. He's still playing at a really high level. And that could maybe lower his cap hit a little bit for next season, give the Seahawks a little more financial flexibility. So there are a lot of moving parts there, but this is what you have to deal with when you have future Hall of Famers that are aging players. And we've seen teams like New England move on from players like that, and sometimes ends up working out moving on a year early. The Seahawks obviously don't like decisions like that, but it's one that they may face in the near future. But for right now, They've got one of the best linebackers in football still in Bobby Wagner. Unfortunately for number 54, though, he is no longer the highest paid, even in his division. That title goes to Fred Warner. He certainly earned it his first three seasons in San Francisco. When we come back in the second quarter, the Seahawks are closing in on training camp. We're less than a week away from the first practice. It's time to start diving into some positional battles. We mentioned that big gaping hole at the Sam linebacker spot. Who's got the edge to replace KJ Wright? We're going to examine when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection. Reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by my draft guru, Rob Rang. We are closing in on training camp. And Rob, one of the best parts about training camp, obviously this year it's going to be a different level because fans didn't get to go to training camp last year. There's going to be a lot more normalcy this year with the Seahawks reporting back to the VMAC. But what is always exciting this time of year is the positional battles. And while most of the Seahawks starting lineup is pretty much set in stone going into the 2021 season, there are a few positions that are up for grabs. And with KJ Wright being unsigned, he's keeping the door open. The Seahawks are keeping the door open. Maybe number 50 still comes back at some point. You and I, as we mentioned yesterday, remain skeptical. Somebody is going to have to fill the void at that Sam linebacker spot. And really, it boils down to two players right now. Darrell Taylor, who didn't play a single game last season, but they're very high on him. And Cody Barton, the third-year linebacker, former third-round pick out of Utah. This is a chance to be one of the more intriguing positional battles to play out when the Seahawks report to camp next week.
Yeah, I think that it is the most intriguing positional battle. I got to be honest with you, Corbin. I'm excited just to see fans out there on the berm. I'm excited to hear DJ Super Sam again, you know, kind of doing his nicks and, you know, which is just makes it that much more entertaining to watch these positional battles. But of all the positional battles, the one that I think is going to generate the most interest, the one that I think is the most critical to Seattle's success is being able to add to their pass rush. And I think that that is going to play right into the strong side linebacker position. As we mentioned yesterday, I think there is a possibility that Seattle plays a lot more nickel base. If Marquise Blair steps up and has the, you know, the healthy season that he can, then I think that you might see Seattle not use those three linebackers. The strong side linebacker may not be that critical role that it was this past year. But without KJ Wright on the field, I think that you have to look at Darrell Taylor as the player who has the edge in this battle because exactly that, because he is so good off the edge, or at least had been at the University of Tennessee. Now, of course, we haven't seen what Darrell Taylor is able to do on an NFL field. And the experience that Cody Barton has after being 2 years in the NFL, including some starts and playing very versatile roles for Seattle, his experience in coverage playing as a rover position at Utah way back in the day with the Utes. I think that also helps him. But yeah, I would agree with you. I think this is primarily a two-man competition at this point. I do absolutely give the edge to Darrell Taylor. I also am intrigued to see if Aaron Donker, the German, you know, that was brought in through the NFL's program here. I'm fascinated to see what he does. But I think that you were wise in mentioning KJ Wright and just starting off the show, Corbin, because if Seattle does not feel comfortable with the idea of that nickel lineup, or if they have not yet seen enough from their young linebackers, Barton, Taylor, and again, Donker is the other one I'm kind of throwing out there as a possible candidate just because of his rushing ability, then I do think that KJ Wright has a chance to come back to this club. But again, as we mentioned yesterday, it most likely is going to be due to others' injury or others' ineffectiveness. At least that's the way it feels right now on the outside, looking at the KJ Wright situation with the Seahawks.
Yeah, I have to look at this competition, and like I said, I think that they're going to give Cody Barton every opportunity to be able to be in the mix here, but I do think Daryl Taylor is the heavy favorite, just based on the fact that we've listened to what Pete Carroll has said throughout their offseason program. It's evident to me that this is what Pete Carroll wants. He wants Daryl Taylor to be on the field, and you mentioned the nickel sets. I think that's the other thing that's really working in Daryl Taylor's favor here, because he plays that Bruce Irvin hybrid role and he can play the Leo position in a pinch. You can slide him over there. He can pin his ears back. He's got enough size that he can play that position. Cody Barton is not going to be doing that. So if they're going to be mostly in nickel and dime sets with two linebackers, they're still going to want Daryl Taylor on the field. And I could see him rushing off the edge in those situations. Then if you want to go to base, you can just slide him over to your Sam linebacker spot. And that's where versatility comes into play. Cody Barton just isn't going to offer that pass rushing ability, the blitzing off the edge that you believe Daryl Taylor is going to. Now, I will say this for Cody Barton. You mentioned the experience. He has started some games at that Sam linebacker spot. Daryl Taylor has not played a snap in an NFL game. I need to see what he looks like when the real bullets start flying in training camp. I'm optimistic that he's going to be a very solid player at that position, but he didn't play last year. He's never played it down in the NFL. Cody Barton has played snaps at all three positions. I just think he's better equipped, though, skill-wise, to be at one of the off-ball linebacker spots. He really had a hard time holding up against the run when he played Sam linebacker, filling in for Michael Kendricks 2 years ago. He didn't set the edge well, gave up outside runs. The Rams were having a field day running their fly sweeps with their receivers because he was not setting the edge. He was not containing. And that was something that KJ Wright was so good at last year. Cody Barton's just a small enough player. I think he has a really hard time managing that part of the role. And that's a critical aspect for the Sam linebacker spot that I believe Daryl Taylor physically is better equipped to be able to do because of his experience playing defensive end in the SEC. He should be able to physically hold up at the point of attack better than Cody Barton. Where Barton might have one slight advantage is he's a former safety. So his ability to drop back into coverage, we saw that his rookie year. He did some impressive things when he dropped back into coverage. And even last year, the couple starts that he had against the Dolphins and Vikings, got his hand on one football that led to a Ryan Neal interception in Miami. So we believe Daryl Taylor can cover. We believe he's fluid enough as an athlete to be able to drop back and do that. But Cody Barton's probably the more natural player in that capacity. So if that's something that's prioritized, then maybe Cody Barton is going to have a better chance of winning this job than we are anticipating. But I think this boils down to, as far as I'm concerned going into camp, it looks to me like this is Daryl Taylor's job to lose. And if he doesn't play well the first week or so of camp, maybe KJ Wright comes back in. Maybe they give Cody Barton a more extended opportunity. They feel he's earned that chance. And I agree with that. But at the same time, again, I think this is Daryl Taylor's job to lose. If it's somebody other than him there, either he had another injury or he simply didn't meet expectations. But I believe this is his job.
I would agree with you. I think that Daryl Taylor, again, has all the physical upside in the world. He's the bigger man. He's the faster man. He's the stronger and longer man. And so all of those attributes should equate to more success at that strong side linebacker spot. And as we talked about, his experience as a pass rusher, I think all that's critical. But Cody Barton, I think, at least in my opinion, is currently the better, more consistent player. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to see, as we just talked about, Daryl Taylor, of course, missed all of his rookie season, but what his mind did not miss his rookie season, his body did. So it's those mental reps. Can Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr., can they trust Daryl Taylor in coverage? Is he going to be able to make those adjustments? You know, Cody Barton can. He may have some physical limitations, and even those are, I think, are relatively slight, but I would 100% agree with you that he did struggle at the point of attack. He's just not quite as big and strong as Daryl Taylor, who's got 20 20 plus pounds on him, or at least did when he was drafted. Now, to me, that was one of the fascinating things I want to mention real quickly. When Seattle drafted Daryl Taylor, he was 267 pounds when he weighed in at the Senior Bowl. There were times last offseason where it looked like it was being reported that he was closer to 245 pounds. So I think that the Seahawks very much have Taylor kind of on a path because they do want him to be able to play in coverage. And so it's going to be critical to see if Taylor not only has the physical ability to do so, but the mental acumen, and of course the most important ability, durability. Does he have that to be able to keep Cody Barton sidelined? I don't know. I think it's going to be a fascinating positional battle, and I'm looking forward to breaking it all down.
Yeah, I'm on the camp where it looks to me like it's going to be a lot more one-sided, but I do think it is worth mentioning that he was around 245 pounds during OTA's minicamp. Now, he was hoping he'd get back up to 255, 260 range. He's not going to be quite as heavy as he was coming out of Tennessee, but if he's 255 with his athleticism playing at Sam linebacker spot, he's got almost all of the physical boxes in his favor compared to Cody Barton. The question to boil down to, is he going to be able to adapt to playing that position against NFL competition in preseason games, training camp practices, when it goes beyond what we saw at OTAs, it's actual NFL practices, how he looks out there. I still believe that this is his job to lose, but maybe Cody Barton ends up making this interesting and we end up having a battle that goes all the way down to the last preseason game. And maybe Cody Barton finds his way into the lineup. We'll have to see. That's what makes this time of year so much fun. We're going to continue breaking down other positional battles here in upcoming episodes, including tomorrow, looking at the third down running back race on our Friday show. When we return for the third quarter, continuing our training camp preview, we just talked about a guy that might fit into Seattle's pass rushing plans. We're going to talk about the defensive end groups heading into the 2021 season. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Continuing our training camp preview, yesterday we talked tight ends. We're going to move to the other side of the line. Players, the tight ends are going to have to block on the practice field. Defensive ends, the Seahawks, you and I believe, have the best depth they've had at that position since way back when Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill were still roaming the field for the Seahawks. They added Kerry Hyder in free agency. They added Alden Smith. We don't know if he's going to be eligible to play yet. The Seahawks are remaining optimistic he's going to be able to participate in camp and play for them this season. And they were able to re-sign Carlos Dunlap after originally releasing him as a cap casualty. So you've got those three veterans. You've got Alton Robinson coming back. Daryl Taylor, as we mentioned, is still going to get his reps playing as a pass rusher off the edge. Even if he's playing Sam linebacker most of the time, they're going to move him around because of his versatility. Benson Mayoa is coming back as well. Rasheem Green still on the depth chart. LJ Collier coming back. This is a group that should be one of the strengths now for this football team. It's weird saying that after several years where this has clearly been a weakness for this football team.
Yeah, it does feel weird saying that. It's been a couple of years since Seattle had a defensive lineman that had anything close to 8-plus sacks in a year. It was back in 2018. Frank Clark and Jaron Reed combined for 23.5 sacks. They've had nobody getting close to that, and obviously both those players are now in Kansas City. Seattle made the big trade to get Carlos Dunlap, to get Jamal Adams, to boost their pass rush, as you mentioned, bring in Kerry Hyder this year. So they have done a lot of things to retool this defensive line, and to me that raises the question. We saw the absolutely historic statistical change in the way that Seattle's defense played a year ago. They were just so horrifically bad. especially against the pass in the first half of last season, then turned it around and were, if didn't lead the NFL, then they were among the leaders in sacks and quarterback pressures in the second half of last season, really led to their turnaround. I'm fascinated to see if Seattle's going to be able to duplicate that. And there is definitely some reasons why I think that there is plenty of hope and optimism. And the biggest reason is just that the level of talent. Bringing back a Dunlap, bringing in a Hyder, for example, Daryl Taylor being added to the equation. You do expect the improvement from a player like an Alton Robinson. And I still am very much a fan of Rasheem Green and LJ Collier. At the same time, I think if you look at the year Seattle had a season ago and some of the offensive tackles and the quarterbacks that they were going up against in the second half of last season, there were a lot of injuries along those offensive lines. There were a lot of injuries at the quarterback position. I think there's a possibility that Seattle is able to actually boost their numbers because you have some slower-footed quarterbacks like Matthew Stafford, for example. Now with Los Angeles Rams, I don't think that he is as likely to get the ball out of his hands as quickly as Jared Goff did previously. But at this end, same thing with San Francisco with Jimmy Garoppolo and his experience. I do think that it's more likely that San Francisco is going to have a little bit better pass protection, quite possibly a better season in general than they had a year ago. But at the same time, again, just the talent that Seattle has on the field, I do think that they can match the sack production than they had a year ago, and not just because of the defensive ends, but of course because of Jamal Adams as well. And that's one of the reasons why I do think that this defensive end, this pass rush group in general, is, as you just mentioned, Corbin, as strong as we've seen in a long, long time in Seattle.
I think overall production-wise that it would be a disappointment if this group is not able to be a top five, top six team for sacks. Based on what we saw the second half last year, you've got basically everybody back, and you've added some other pieces to the puzzle. Kerry Hyder had 8.5 sacks for the 49ers last year. I'd be surprised if he's going to get enough reps with the number of players they're going to be rotating in for him to touch that number again this season. But he is a capable pass rusher at that base defensive end spot. LJ Collier had nearly 20 quarterback pressures last year, only 3 sacks, but it feels like that number could go up in his third season. And then, of course, you got all the explosive edge rushers they're going to have over behind Carlos Dunlap. You anticipate that Daryl Taylor is going to get his reps there at the Leo position. Benson Mayo in the second half, when he was used far more sparingly, it kept him fresh. He was much more dangerous rushing off the edge. And then you mentioned Rasheem Green. We've seen flashes. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy long enough, but he's a guy that you can move up and down the line. Alton Robinson had 4 sacks and limited action as a rookie. I mean, they just have enough different types of pass rushers and enough talent and depth there with the veterans and the young players they've got coming back. And that's not mentioning Jamal Adams being thrown in the mix. And Marquise Blair can blitz from the slot. So can Ugo Amadi if he's playing there. You have a number of players that aren't even on your defensive line that can impact your pass rush and cause problems for the opposing offensive line. And so I think it'd be a big disappointment if they're not able to match the type of production that we saw from in the second half. Improved quarterbacks they're playing against maybe limits that number a little bit, because they are going to be playing tougher quarterbacks, especially early in the season. But I still think when you look at this group with the depth they've got, the ability to keep guys fresh, there's no question that this should be one of the better pass rushes in the NFC. The big question for me with all of that talent, how do the rotations formalize at the Leo and base defensive end positions? Maybe a position competition we'll talk about at some point. Collier versus Hyder. You've got the former first-round pick in Collier that made big strides last year. Hyder was really productive for the 49ers. That's not a bad problem to have, trying to figure out who's going to get the bulk of snaps between those two players. And on the other side, we expect Carlos Dunlap's going to be your starter, but he's 32. You're going to want to keep him fresh. Is Benson Mayoa going to be the main backup behind him? Is it going to be Daryl Taylor? Or is Alton Robinson, because of how well he played last year? Of course, we're not even considering where Aldon Smith would fit into this. If Aldon Smith is cleared, he might be your second best player among that group that can rush from the Leo defensive end spot. So it's a good problem to have, but you're going to have to figure out what that rotation, what that pecking order looks like, particularly at the Leo spot.
Yeah, I don't envy Clint Hurt, the Seattle's defensive line coach, much. I mean, because he is going to have a lot of hungry mouths to feed, and it's going to be difficult to keep everybody happy. But you know, you mentioned some of the glory days with Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril, and I think the Seahawks fans can recall those days and just what an awesome rotation that Seattle had along their defensive line. Everybody was fresh, and so it was one of the reasons why Seattle's pass rush was so formidable back then. So yeah, I think that's one of the most exciting things about this is that, you know, you've heard me use that Baskin Robbins pick your own flavor kind of analogy before, and I think that that's exactly what the Seahawks have now at the defensive end position. It's one thing when you have that at running back or at wide receiver, but if you have that along the defensive line, then you really can wreak havoc on opponents. And you know, I keep mentioning the teams like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, defending champs, the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, and you know, obviously back-to-back Super Bowl appearances for them, and they have that exact type of rotation along their defensive line, and it just is one of the underrated reasons why they were hoisting the Lombardi Trophy the last couple of years. I think that Seattle has a championship caliber defensive line if they all can stay healthy, because again, we have Seattle has some players that are you know, aging, especially in Dunlap. With Benson Mayo, as you mentioned, he did have his snaps cut a little bit last year, and some of that was durability. Some of that was a talent of other players around him. Can Kerry Hyder duplicate the 8.5 sacks that he had a year ago in San Francisco when you know that he got a lot more playing time a year ago because of some of the injuries that the 49ers had, like Nick Bosa, for example? And so if Hyder doesn't have the same number of quality snaps, does his production really, really drop? I think to kind of answer your question, I think it's a really good one, is how does Seattle, you know, decide who gets the playing time, who gets the starting role? I personally think that your starting Leo is going to be Carlos Dunlap. Your starting base is most likely to be LJ Collier. I think the Hyder is going to be playing an awful lot as well. That backup Leo defensive end spot, I think, is going to be really interesting. We spent a lot of time, of course, talking about Daryl Taylor a segment ago. I also think that Benson Mayoa, to me, can play that role. We also talked about Alton Robinson. I think that he can play that role as well. To me, those are the three guys. And then with Smith, Alton Smith, to me, is absolutely the wild card. As you said, he could be the second best player on their defensive line if everything turns out okay.
But can you count on him being there?
That's exactly. And that's the thing, is you really can't. But there's no talent, no question that he has a great deal of talent. So to me, that's what's going to make this positional group fascinating. I think it's really good, not only for Seattle's defense, obviously. I think it's good for Seattle's offensive line. At times, I think there's been a huge discrepancy between the talent on one group and the other, and they didn't get themselves, they didn't improve as much throughout training camp. You had to kind of wait and evaluate on preseason games. I think that every single training camp practice in which the line of scrimmage is able to actually hit each other, you're going to be able to make some real evaluations about who on Seattle's defensive end group can actually play ball a little bit.
And the one downside to all of this, because we've talked about the talent and the depth, the number of bodies that the Seahawks could potentially have, if they avoid injury, probably not going to be able to keep all of these players on the 53-man roster. So that puts somebody like a Rashim Green that's entering the last year of his contract on notice. You're going to have the training camp and preseason of your life to be able to hang on to a roster spot. And you could maybe argue for Alton Robinson, we think you're going to be on the team, but we can't keep 8 or 9 rushers either. And we've got all these veterans. If Alton Smith's in camp and plays well, that's going to put pressure on him. So this is a good problem to have, but there's a chance you're going to have an odd man out or two by the time camp gets over with. And you might have to cut ties with a player like Rashim Green or maybe even Alton Robinson. I find it hard to believe they would do that with how well he played last year, but that's the type of talent and depth that the Seahawks have now amassed at the defensive end position. Real quick, let's talk bold predictions here at defensive end. What's your bold prediction going into the 2021 season?
Well, I don't know that it's that bold, Corbin, considering that Carlos Dunlap has been, gone to the Pro Bowl a couple of times. He's had, I believe it's 4 seasons where he had 8.5 or more sacks. I think that he's going to get to at least that 8 sack threshold. I think that he is going to be Seattle's leading pass rusher, leading sacker among his defensive line. I think that Jamal Adams still could wind up being the leading pass rusher on this club. But again, as I mentioned before, it's been since 2018 when Seattle had a defensive lineman that had had at least 8 sacks. I think that Carlos Dunlap does that for the Seahawks this year. That's my bold prediction for this group.
I'm going to go to the interior. Well, these guys will be playing base defensive end too, but the big reason why I'm making this prediction is because Kerry Hyder and LJ Collier both have the size to rush from the three tech position. And I think Collier is going to play extensive snaps there. He did last year. I could see him playing even a higher percentage of his snaps reduced inside this season with Kerry Hyder being on the field with him as the base end. It gives you a lot of flexibility. I think those two players combined to produce at least 12 sacks this year. And some of you may be listening like, well, Kerry Hyder had 8.5 by himself last year. But I mentioned this earlier. He played a ton of reps for the 49ers. I think with all the depth Seattle has, he's not going to have to play that much. So I think that his pass rushing numbers could go down. On the flip side, LJ Collier had a lot of pressures last year, and he had a lot of close calls with quarterback sacks. I think he can get to 5 or 6 this year, especially if he's playing most of his snaps inside with the athleticism that he brings playing as a three tech. So I think 12 sacks is definitely doable, especially with that extra game added. And if the Seahawks can get that type of pass rushing production from those two players, they've got a chance to have a really special season up front in the trenches going after Matt Stafford, Jimmy Garoppolo, and of course, Kyler Murray. Going to be a lot of fun to see how this group plays out going into the season. And it's going to be a group I'm going to be watching very closely in training camp, especially if Alden Smith is available to play. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by Peter Bukowski. He updates you on the latest news in every major sport in under 20 minutes with the help of our local experts. Follow Locked On Today on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on our Friday show, Nick Lee is going to be returning after a few week hiatus, and the two of us are going to be playing a spirited game of love them or leave them, examining bubble players for the Seahawks on offense and defense. It's going to be a blast. We're looking forward to it. You won't want to miss this Blue Friday show. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.